On today's episode of The Good Word, we talk surprises in the NBA's first 2 weeks. The Golden State Warriors, old guys still winning. Dylan Brooks, has he figured it out in Houston? And the Dallas Mavericks, have the Mavs finally found a supporting cast around Luka Doncic? All that and much more on this episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill. I am a senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. And you can also see us on YouTube, where you can, if you're seeing me on YouTube, you see I am wearing my Janet Jackson sweatshirt that I got in preparation for one of her concerts. The first time I've actually seen her live. And I'm wearing this sweatshirt on purpose because this is a What Have You Done For Me Lately edition. Because this is the start of the season. So we got a bunch of different surprises. I got producer John with me, who's going to chime in on one of those surprises in a couple of minutes. But we're going to start off with a team I saw a couple of nights ago. I saw them on opening night against the Phoenix Suns in the Bay. And then they came to where I am in Detroit on Monday, the Golden State Warriors. And I was really mixed on them coming into the season. You traded for Chris Paul. You traded Jordan Poole. Draymond Green's on his deal. Klay Thompson does not have an extension. Steve Kerr does not have a contract beyond this year. And they've largely squandered the high draft picks that they've had. James Wiseman, he's a third string center for the Pistons. Moses Moody, we're still waiting on him. Jonathan Kuminga, maybe he's starting to come around just a little bit. We'll see about that. But the entire engine of this revolves around Stephen Curry. And usually, y'all, you don't see a team that stays this good this long. And it is early, and they're 6-2 at time of this recording. They lost to Cleveland. They lost to Phoenix. And they've beaten some pretty good teams. They beat Oklahoma City, even though they had to beat Oklahoma City without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And they had to do it with a Steph Curry layup right before the buzzer that required a review and everything else. But this is still the bones of that championship team. And I was really, really curious about how Chris Paul was going to fit in with this roster, how Chris Paul's going to fit into that locker room. Because basically what it comes down to 6 to 8 minutes a game. He's not starting. He's coming off the bench. I think if my numbers are correct, 29 assists to 0 turnovers in his last 5 games. That's important because when you think of the freewheeling Golden State Warriors, right? At least, especially last year, you think of them last year as a team that couldn't win on the road. You think of them last year as a team with all that drama when, you know, Draymond went Mike Tyson punch out on Jordan Poole. Like, it's been talked about ad nauseum, and those things seem to have a cumulative effect on a team. Like, think about the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl when they did not run Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson threw that interception, and that haunted that team for years after the fact. I wondered if the Draymond Green, Jordan Poole situation would have that sort of effect on this franchise. It does not. And I think about those 6 to 8 minutes where Steph Curry is on the floor with Chris Paul, and you can't do it long, right? You can't keep those two on the floor for long stretches of time because of the size, because teams will try to pick on them. But when they're on the floor together and it's towards the end of the game and it's in those momentum seizing moments, is in one of those, shall you say, those clutch moments that aren't in the last minute and a half of the game. The moment where you can take a 6-point lead to 9, or you can take an 8-point lead to 11, where you can really put your foot on a team's neck, as long as you are playing smart, which is something the Warriors have not done over the past year. Adding Chris Paul to that means that you're going to value those possessions that are right in the throes of it. And I saw it. They were up 3. The Pistons were pesky. You know, a lot of that, you know, opening week sheen has sort of worn off, but they have played really well against Golden State that night. Golden State's up 3, 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and you're starting to feel the Warriors starting to take over the game a little bit. And not just take over the game for the sake of winning, but taking over the game for the sake of, hey, let's get these guys off the floor. Let's get Steph off the floor. Let's get him some rest, right? Let's get Chris Paul some rest. Saving these minutes are at a premium. The Warriors get a stop. Chris Paul brings it up. He slows it down. He signals for Jonathan Kuminga to call a down screen for Steph, right? And this is one of those moments where if Steph's handling the ball, he might throw a behind-the-back pass out of bounds like he did in the finals. Y'all remember that? That behind-the-back pass in a game 7 of the NBA Finals, and Steph threw a behind-the-back pass and it landed in the fifth row? Like, Chris Paul ain't doing that, right? Kuminga sets a down screen. Steph catches it in the corner. Pump fakes for no reason. Launches it. Boom. 7th 3 of the game. Turns to the crowd. Shimmies like Steph does, right? You know, humble superstar Steph. And I thought about that moment, and that moment didn't really mean as much in that particular game. They were going to win that game anyway. But I'm starting to think of a team that wants to be top 10 offense or top 5 offense, top 5 defense. You've got to save minutes where you can. You've got to beat the teams that you should, like a Detroit Pistons team. You've got to beat those teams. And they were in the second half of a back-to-back. They were in Cleveland the night before, road back-to-back on the other side of the country. So it was not a given. And Steph goes Steph, right? 7 threes in the game, 34. Chris Paul had another like 6 assist performance. They're trying to figure out the CP Steph thing. But they're also trying to figure out Chris Paul being aggressive offensively and not just being this guy that's going to set everybody up. Because sooner or later, teams are going to start trying to take that away when those two are on the floor together. But for right now, they're going 10 deep. Draymond Green is back. He looks active defensively. He's doing everything else that he should. He's bouncing around the floor. Kevon Looney is there. The only player that you can really look at and say, man, I wonder if he's going to turn the corner is Andrew Wiggins. And that's a weird, weird thing. Because Steve Kerr is basically saying we need more from him. And at some point, they're going to need more from Andrew Wiggins. But for right now, as of this particular moment, and they're going to play Denver by the time you hear this, they're playing Denver tonight in Denver. That's going to be a litmus test for them. But for right now, it's three teams in the West. I won't say head and shoulders above everybody else, but there are three teams that are in that upper echelon, at least in terms of records. It's the champs in Denver. It's Golden State. And it's Dallas. So to have Chris Paul acclimate himself, and you know that Chris Paul, from a leadership standpoint, you know, he walks into a locker room and he has a certain level of gravitas. All right, cool. I'm Chris Paul, but I'm walking into a locker room full of champions. That's a different level of credibility that you have to be careful about. Because, like, I remember talking to a GM, and he was talking about a Hall of Fame player being in a locker room full of players, or at least the bones of a championship team. And that player said to the GM, he said, man, they treat me like I'm in high school, like I haven't done anything, because he hasn't won. And I don't think that was going to happen with Chris Paul, but I was very curious how that was going to affect Steph in the locker room, because Draymond's going to run his mouth. Chris Paul's going to be himself. There's only so much oxygen in a particular locker room, but that seems to be working. The early return says that this team is still going to be pretty formidable. And I just think last year, I won't say last year was an aberration, because everybody there had to own that. Everybody there, whether it was Steve Kerr, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, that cannot just fall on Jordan Poole. That has to be everybody taking a level of accountability for the disaster that was last year. But they have a strong enough infrastructure, a strong enough body of work that they can feel like they can bounce back, even with critical contract years for Clay and critical contract year for Steve Kerr on the sidelines, that they feel like they have the infrastructure, they have the corporate knowledge, that they can bounce back in a Western Conference where every single game is critical. Let's be perfectly honest here. Like, I don't think this is going to be a year where you have, you know, 6 or 7 teams. I think in 2001, if memory serves, 2001, you had 6 teams in the West winning 50 games. 6. And I think that was probably a record at that time. And you know what happened in the playoffs that year? Y'all know what happened in the playoffs that year? Shaq and Kobe steamrolled everybody. They didn't lose a damn game that playoff run until they played Allen Iverson in the NBA Finals and gave up, 48 in that game one. But that was one of the greatest singular runs a team has ever had. In the Western Conference that year, had six teams that won 50 games. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not sure if the Nuggets are going to run through everybody roughshod, but they're not a surprise. That third team I'm telling y'all about, that third team, the Dallas Mavericks, right? Everybody in the preseason prognostications, it literally goes one of two ways. It goes, Luka's a preseason MVP, and then it also subsequently says, Jason Kidd's going to be the first coach to get fired. Now, somebody's got to explain to me how those two things square, right? Doesn't seem to square. But Dallas, they've had a soft schedule, right? They've played one good team. That was the Denver Nuggets. It was the play-in, the in-season tournament game last Friday night. Lose by double digits. So you wonder how much of that is a lack of competition. They have not played a team that is of their ilk, of their level. Okay, fine. And Kyrie Irving is there, right? Kyrie Irving hasn't been the Kyrie Irving that we've expected him to be, where last year he was averaging, I think, somewhere around 28, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and was really, really efficient from the field. He hasn't been that this year, but Luka has been excellent. And I'm going to bring in Producer John because this is the team of John's youth. Producer John, besides Derek Lively, who I was really, really intrigued by coming into the draft. Like, pretty much he's going to be their starting center. Like, he started every game but one, if I remember correctly, and he's grabbing 7-8 rebounds a game, and he's finishing above the rim. Like, it just seems like they're starting to figure some stuff out. Is that Jason Kidd? Is that Grant Williams? I feel like there's a lot going on that we should be paying attention to.
I mean, you nailed it. There's a lot going on that we should be paying attention to with the Dallas Mavericks. I think, yeah, Derek Lively is a big part of it. We've said it on this podcast. I've heard it on other podcasts. Luka's never had a pick and roll big man that can roll and grab alley-oops like this. They've tried to do it last year when they signed JaVale McGee. They've tried to do it a little bit with Dwight Powell, who's just kind of a sieve on the defensive end and much better suited coming off the bench. So Lively helps a lot. The key to everything right now appears to be Grant Williams. Like, Grant Williams' leadership was needed on that team. Grant Williams' defense and toughness was needed on that team. And the thing that I wasn't expecting is that in this offense where Luka can set him up with open shots, which is a thing he didn't have in Boston, he didn't have a point guard setting him up with open shots, he has turned into a knockdown three-point shooter because he's getting so many open looks at it. So he's helping offensively, he's helping defensively, he's helping in the locker room, and I think he's really been the glue that ties it all together for them in the early part of this season. I still think the biggest key is Luka shooting over 40% from three-point range. I don't know if that's going to hold up. I've always thought his shot selection, especially behind the arc, leaves a lot to be desired, and the shot selection hasn't changed. He's just making them now, which feels a lot like when James Harden was in Houston and we were like, the step back, that's not an efficient. Oh, never mind. He's just making them now.
Well, the thing for Luka to me is less about the shot selection and more about the usage. Like, if you look at some of the higher usage seasons in NBA history, it's like James Harden's got a bunch of them and Luka Doncic is right up there with him. And I'm not going to get super basketball nerd with you guys, but you guys know what usage is. And I felt like my biggest criticism of Harden during his absolute prime was that if he wasn't scoring and he wasn't assisting, then he was useless on offense. And I don't mean useless as like an overstatement. I literally mean if he didn't have the ball in his hands and he had a 38% usage, which meant if you were defending him, man, if you were able to take a possession off, you were happy about it. But for me with Harden, and it kind of is the case with Luka, and I wondered if Jason Kidd is trying to get Luka out of this pattern, but it's hard to get a great player out of his patterns, is that can you be a threat without the ball? Can you be a threat where if I'm not setting you up, if I'm not taking a shot, I'm still making the defense account for me. I'm still making all eyes focus on me, whether that's cutting or screening for someone else and being a threat, being just literally being a threat for having to making the defenses think that there's a possibility that you're going to be impactful, even though you don't have the ball. That makes everybody else on offense that much better because you can't focus on what Kyrie is doing. You can't focus on Grant Williams or off the bench when Tim Hardaway Jr. comes in the game. And Tim Hardaway Jr., of course, wants to start, but it seems like he's a better fit off the bench with the lineups that they have. And also, here's the other thing for me. Like you said, John, Luka's shooting 40% or 41% from three. They've got four guys, none of them named Kyrie Irving, shooting around 40% from three. I don't know if that's sustainable, right? You mentioned Grant Williams. He's shooting 54% from three on seven attempts a night. Tim Hardaway taking 11 threes a night, shooting 39%. Josh Green, remember Josh Green? Remember that draft pick, that athletic draft pick? Shooting 40% from threes on five attempts a night. They've got a lot there, or five attempts rather, per 36 minutes. But Kyrie's only shooting 24. You know that number is going to rise. Kyrie is way too efficient of a scorer to shoot this low of a number. Now, you can argue how effective, how strong that number is going to be. You know what I mean? How that number equates to winning, right? Because Kyrie has put up some really good numbers and has not been able to affect winning unless he's playing alongside LeBron James or if he's playing alongside Kevin Durant and James Harden, and they're all right, and they're all healthy. Like, we've yet to see Kyrie Irving in a suboptimal situation have that sort of effect on winning. But Dallas is launching, and I think that's going to be a key. If you've got Lively diving to the rim, which is a whole level of vertical spacing because you got to account for him, and you got Luka taking 11 threes a night, you got Hardaway taking 10, you've got Grant Williams taking 6 or 7, they're just going to go bombs away from you. And they're literally going to remember a couple years ago, it was Luka and the Lukanairs, right? And they stretched you out defensively. Like, that's how they beat Phoenix in that second round series. They wore Phoenix out. They trapped all over the floor. They picked you up literally from the point that you crossed half court. I don't think this is that type of defense. But considering this is an offensive game and considering you don't want to stretch or stress Luka out when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, this may be a sustainable formula for them. Now, how is this going to work when you're playing against better teams? Curious what it looks like when you're playing bigger teams. What if Minnesota's actually for real and you've got to contend with one big guy in Minnesota? Right? Just one. You got to contend with one big guy. But what happens when you play the Victor Wembanyamas of the world again, where Big Vic is no longer the guy that's just feeling his way around the floor, but he is this lean, mean fighting machine that he's turned into in every game since his season opener where he played Dallas, right? I'm very curious how the size will come up. But if you have Luka Doncic and he's being efficient, this may be something. And I'm not saying something as in they're going to get to the Western Conference Finals again. I'm saying this is another team that you got to account for. And that in itself makes for another team. Because in the West, I would say there's probably only one team you don't have to account for. And that's probably the Portland Trailblazers. But everybody else has designs on getting to the playoffs, have designs on making noise. And there's only but so many spots. Like, San Antonio probably won't get there this year. But you better get your wins on them now, because have y'all seen Big Vic? Have y'all seen what he did to the Phoenix Suns and Kevin Durant on the second game of a home and home? Like, that shows that this guy can figure things out really, really quickly against top level competition. And he's not one of the surprises for me, at least not for me. He's not one of the surprises. I'm a little surprised that he's picked up the game this quickly, but I'm not surprised that he's every bit of what we thought he was going to be. So he's not a surprise to me. That was just my Big Vic, my Big Slim interlude, because I'll actually be in Oklahoma City for the Skinny Bowl next week. Next Tuesday, Chet, Big Slim, Skinny Bowl. Can't wait. And it's an in-season tournament game. It's one of those in-season tournament games that counts for a little bit extra. So that's going to be a lot of fun next Tuesday. I think it's on TNT. So now we got to go to the other side of it, right? I'm going to give you a player that I'm shocked by. When I say shocked, I mean shocked. I'm going to bring Producer John back. Producer John.
Yes, sir.
If I told you that a player shot 20% over his career average from the field, 21% from three-point range over his career average, and he also got ejected in his first preseason game, could you tell me who that player was if you didn't know?
If he got ejected, there's a decent chance it's Dylan Brooks.
There's a really good chance it's Dylan Brooks. There's almost no chance that it's anybody else. That's the thing. There's a chance that it's nobody else besides Dylan Brooks. And I don't know if there's a causation correlation thing here. But Dylan Brooks being... Memphis literally threw Dylan Brooks out. They acted like Dylan Brooks was running around here with the tool. They acted like Dylan Brooks was a member of Ja Morant's entourage, the way that they got rid of him and they told everybody, we're not bringing him back. You rarely hear, I'm going to tell y'all this, y'all, whether it was by hook or by crook, whether it was meant to get out or not, but the fact that Dylan Brooks was told and the world was told soon after that Memphis would not even give you a cursory phone call, that they would not even, you know, fake it like we want to bring you back. For someone who had been that important to that franchise in developing an identity. And I know the numbers were the numbers and Dylan Brooks out here hitting dudes in the balls. That ain't cool at all. But Dylan Brooks was a key cog in that franchise developing an identity. And the embarrassment, if he feels embarrassment, you never know. Dylan Brooks could be one of those dudes that don't feel a thing. After all, this dude was coming out of the tunnel with a Stone Cold Steve Austin leather vest on with no shirt underneath it. And he let everybody know it because they put it out on the world. They put it out in the world. This wasn't him getting caught. So he might not feel pain or embarrassment or shame. If you're going out like that as a grown-ass man, and you want the world to see it, I question your decision-making, but I digress. When a franchise tells you that they don't want you and you can't even use them as a leverage point to say, hey, I want to get some more money from this franchise. Can you guys act like you want me so I can get a few extra bucks? That had to be really, really embarrassing for him. So for him to go to Team Canada at the World Cup, and Jake Fisher had a great story on that some time ago where, you know, talked about him tracking his shots and taking so many a day and changing his form and everything else. And you hear about these stories all the season or throughout the summer and throughout the offseason all the time. It is the 25 pounds of muscle story. I've also changed my shot form. Every player has gained 25 pounds of muscle in the offseason and they come back looking like they same skinny ass selves, right? But Dylan Brooks, the numbers with the Houston Rockets. And yes, he plays for the Houston Rockets. Ime Udoka's Houston Rockets, a team that we have not talked much about, a coach we have not talked that much about. Maybe we will if you watch that Jeezy Nia Long interview on YouTube, if y'all know what I'm talking about. Maybe we will then. Maybe we won't. But we haven't talked much about the Rockets, and we haven't thought much about Dylan Brooks outside of the nonsense that he's done. And a lot of that was self-inflicted, but the bones of that is a really, really good defender and quietly one of those culture guys that you kind of have to worry about. And I'm not saying, once again, I'm bringing it back. I'm not saying that Memphis's struggles is because Dylan Brooks isn't there. But I'm not saying that it ain't because he ain't there. Like, you can't just say it's all Ja Morant because Memphis... One year without Ja Morant due to injuries and not criminal activity, they went 18-2 without him. Now, granted, Steven Adams is out for the year. Brandon Clark is out for the year. They got Marcus Smart, but Derrick Rose is out. He's week to week with his knee injury. And of course, John Morant is suspended 25 games. But Dylan Brooks is a huge part of that. And now he's been entrusted in Houston, it seems, and been empowered to be himself, which in turn has made him a more productive basketball player on the floor. Like, people are going to bag on, and I'm not sure if we have the sound of him talking about how he's going to defend LeBron.
Ready to lock him up. Been shooting the ball well, he's been playing well, so I'm just there to make him tired, make him get into that, you know, fourth quarter early.
But for anybody that's bagging on him for saying he's going to lock him up, that's how basketball players talk. Because it's Dylan Brooks, we're going to put a little bit much on it. But I think it's much ado about nothing. I think you want to have your players have a lot of confidence. I didn't mind the Memphis Grizzlies moxie in last year's playoff series. I thought they just played dumb. Like, you can talk all you want. I thought they just played dumb. I thought they had, up until game four, a decent enough chance of winning that series. Now, granted, they didn't have the bigs to do it. Dylan Brooks, of course, goes crazy. They self-implode in a few seconds of the critical game four, where they go from being up two to giving up a straight line layup to LeBron to send the game into overtime, which I thought was one of the biggest blunders in, like, I've seen over the past couple of years live. But Dylan Brooks, and I'm putting my name behind it, like, I voted for Dylan Brooks all defense. I think he was actually on my defensive player of the year ballot. He might have been number three on my ballot. So I'm not surprised that he's having this type of effect, at least culturally, on the Houston Rockets, because they've been aimless for the past few years. They've been aimless since James Harden left them. And now that you've got Amen Thompson and you got Fred VanVleet and you got Green, like, they're trying to figure things out. And when you're adding vets to young players or trying to show them the way, you got to be very careful about putting the right type of vets around younger guys, especially in a place like Houston. I'm sure you guys can figure out why. So Dylan Brooks being efficient defensively, high steal rate, highest rebound rate. I'm not sure if the shooting is real. I'm not sure if he will go from being a 41% shooter to shooting 60%. I don't know if that's sustainable. I don't know if a guy who normally shoots barely 35 from three will shoot 56 from three. That's not sustainable. But I think the effect that he has on the team, and maybe it won't bear out to have all these wins this year. They won't be a team, in my opinion, that's going to be in the play-in this year. The West is too strong. I just told you, all these teams that have all these playoff aspirations. And of course, some teams are going to disappoint, but everybody, I think, feels like they have a decent enough chance early on, not to mention the Clippers getting James Harden, not to mention Zion Williamson being healthy finally for the time being. Let's make that perfectly clear, right? It's for the time being. We know how these things can go. It's not even December yet. It's not December yet, right? Hold off on your on elevating your Zion stock. Let's just chill and see how that works. But for Dylan Brooks to be in Houston having that type of effect, I think that is something that's sustainable long term, maybe if not this year. And you know what? I just thought about this, John. This is a lot of John y'all getting today. Ain't no guests from me today, but we got producer John. I'm bringing producer John in here. Producer John.
Yep.
You think Dylan Brooks would work on the Chicago Bulls?
I think the Bulls fans would love him. I think he would probably make that team better. I don't think they would all of a sudden be one of the best teams in the East. But yeah, I think he'd work on the Chicago Bulls.
You know what? Dylan Brooks is like a mirror. You know, he's like a mirror. There's a few guys in the league who are mirrors. If there's something great going on with your franchise, he's going to be reflective of it. If your franchise is a clown show, he's going to reflect that too, right? We've seen there's certain guys who are mirrors. Draymond Green is a mirror. Jimmy Butler is a mirror. They're mirrors in different ways, but they are so transparent in how they behave and comport themselves. Like, if you put him with the Bulls, And I'm not saying trade them for DeRozan or anything like that, but just the Bulls being one of these teams that's disappointing, that I feel like is trying to manage itself, manage themselves, when they don't have Lonzo Ball this year. And Lonzo Ball was a big piece of glue for this franchise. And we saw it for a small stretch of time, like 2 years ago. And you had DeRozan and LaVine on the wings, and you had Lonzo Ball, you know, pressuring the defense. They got out in the open floor a lot. And you could see that the gamble of pressing the fast forward button that Arturis Conashovis and Mark Eversley, once they replaced Gar Foreman and John Paxson in the front office, that they were like, okay, we're going to keep Zach LaVine. We're going to add DeRozan in free agency. We're going to trade Wendell Carter Jr. for Vucevic. And we're going to see if we can make this work. When they did that, it made all the sense in the world because you had Lonzo Ball as the great connector, as the glue. Now, because we don't know if he's going to play again or when he's going to play again, he's not going to play again this season. They've already said that. They're lost with arguably not their most talented player by a long shot, but maybe their most critical player. So now they're having team meetings that aren't team meetings, right? Maybe it wasn't a team meeting. Who knows what it was or what it wasn't after the season opening loss to Oklahoma City, where you lose by 20. Everybody's up in arms for what Zach LaVine said or didn't say. I really didn't think what he said was a big deal. I think what they're showing is a bigger deal. Like, Zach LaVine has had a 50. He had a 50-point game in Detroit. And that only prevented them from getting blown out. Like, he kept them close, but he could only do so much. LaVine and DeRozan are playing off the ball. You know, Kobe White, they're trying to figure him out. He seems like an off the bench player who's playing point guard as opposed to being point guard. We're all still waiting on Patrick Williams. I'm waiting on Patrick Williams. I thought as the fourth pick in the draft that year, I was like, oh no, he's going to be a star. I didn't think Kawhi Leonard, but I thought Kawhi Leonard-ish, like powerful wing, good tools, going to figure the shot out, going to figure out the aggressiveness, and we're still waiting. And the Bulls themselves are waiting. The Bulls and DeRozan didn't come to an agreement on the extension, so that leaves him in a tenuous spot. Vooch was complaining about touches after the season opener. We just told you about Zach LaVine and where he's at. It's just a weird, weird mix right now. And on top of that, Billy Donovan got an extension that does not kick in until next season. And in the Eastern Conference, where you've got Milwaukee and Boston at the top, Philly that's surprisingly still good, even in the wake of everything with James Harden, New York, Cleveland, Miami. Like, the East is not as good as the West, but you feel like the top six teams are, I don't want to say cemented, but you feel like you know who they are. And then you've got Atlanta and Indiana and, you know, the rest of those teams that are trying to position themselves, Toronto, that's trying to position themselves to being in the play-in or at least crashing the party. Because short of Milwaukee and Boston, I would say maybe Boston right now, because Milwaukee is still figuring themselves out too. Everybody wants to position themselves to maybe be in the trade deadline, the trade market, to see, can we be good enough to go poach a player from a disappointing team? Can we be good enough that we can leverage some of the draft picks that we have in the future? Maybe not to beat Boston this year, but to position ourselves that, hey, as long as we can get better and consider ourselves climbing, we don't have to completely wait these next couple of years out, that we can position ourselves to maybe really take advantage, to do what the Toronto Raptors did in 2019. One move away, boom, lightning in the bottle. You got Kawhi Leonard, you win a championship. But with the Bulls, you don't know if they're one move away from putting themselves, you know, in a decent spot, or Lonzo Ball being healthy away from being in a decent spot, or if they need to tear down again, like they did when they traded Jimmy Butler for Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine. That's an intriguing but disappointing team to me. I think they can turn it around. I think they can, but they need a lot of consistency from their main guys. Like, you need Vooch to figure it out. And you re-sign him this offseason. You need to have some clarity with DeRozan. Like, you don't want that guy being on the back end of his career and feeling like, okay, where's my future going to be? Is it going to be here? And then you got Zach, who had a great second half of last year after his knee surgery, after signing that 5-for-200 deal with the Bulls. You need to make sure that everybody's on the same page there. So it's a very, very curious start to the season. I'm really excited. I like the start to the season. I think it's a lot of intriguing stories, a lot of intriguing teams that doesn't feel too, like every team, even the bad teams, seem to have something that's going for them, seems to have like, hey, you know, you squint, things can get better. You squint and this works out and that works out. I think it's the influx of talent. I think it's the old guys staying great or staying good as long as they stay good. I think it's the young guys, the influx of talent. And I don't think we need to talk about adding teams and everything else, but I'm sure that'll happen in 2 years when a new media rights deal is. But every team has a little bit of hope. Every team can squint just a little bit and see their future if things break right. There used to be 4 or 5 teams every year that had no hope, that literally all they could do was wait on the next draft pick. I don't feel like anybody's waiting on this particular draft. Not that there's not top guys there, but I'm just saying, I don't think there's any team that's looking at this and saying, man, we're just going to wait till next year. We got none for you. I think that shows the league's in a position of strength. But I can end this by being completely honest with y'all. I don't know who beat Denver. I don't know who's beating that dude in June. I don't know who's beating that dude 4 times in 7 games. This might just be a wait till next year for everybody else, but the Denver Nuggets, because they're not a surprise. And that is the show for today. I'm your host, Vincent Goodwill. Don't forget, Jake and Dan will be back for another episode of No Cap Room tomorrow. I will be back with another episode of The Good Word on Monday with my guest, the great Monica McNutt, great friend of the show. So until then, everybody, be safe.